politician's agenda is to make sure that we have an ecosystem that allows that. So to encourage, obviously, businesses to set up shop here. So from an SME perspective, if we are portraying that we are not open for business, it looks bad. Money makes a world go round.
It makes a world go round. Welcome to The Laundry, the podcast connecting AML, compliance and financial crime to the real world. I'm your host, Marit, CEO of Strice, and in this episode, we are asking, why have thousands of the UK's small businesses been debanked? Some pretty shocking statistics surfaced recently from an inquiry by the UK's Treasury Committee looking into access to finance. Obtaining data from 8 UK banks, including the big four of Lloyds, Barclays, HSBC and NatWest, the committee found that more than 140,000 accounts held by small and medium-sized enterprises were forcibly closed in the past year. All banks called to the committee, who served more than 5 million SMEs overall, gave explanations related to financial crime, fraud, financial viability, and even dormant accounts. But following hot on the heels of the Nigel Farage Coutts drama of last year, as well as the country's recent dip into a recession, these figures raise concern about how the backbone of the UK economy is being served by the banking industry. So, is this a real issue or a storm in a teacup? In today's episode, we discuss, why are thousands of businesses debanked? How legitimate are the compliance concerns raised by the banks? And how do we make the system better at spotting bad actors and front organizations? To dive into this topic, I'm here with James Nurse, Managing Director of FinTrail, and Neil Donovan, Senior Associate in the Corporate Crime Team at Ashurst. Welcome back to The Laundry, both. James, can you remind our listeners about you, your background, and FinTrail?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me again. It's great to be here speaking to you guys. So my background, I've worked in financial services in the past, both in second line roles, first line roles, all in financial crime. I've been at FinTrail for 6 years. I lead the consultancy team here at FinTrail. We support various regulated and unregulated firms manage their financial crime risk.
And Neil, over to you.
Thanks, Marit, and really great to be back on The Laundry again. Thanks for inviting me back. So as you mentioned, I'm a senior associate in the corporate crime team at Ashurst. We're a global law firm with 31 offices around the world. I specialize in acting for corporate clients in criminal and regulatory investigations, particularly clients in the financial services sector, and advising them on the full spectrum of financial crime risks. So UK's AML regime, sanctions regime, bribery, and tax evasion as well.
Thank you both for the introduction. Let's dive into the main topic of the day, the debanked SMEs. So let's start by looking at the 140,000 debanked SMEs. That's such a shocking numbers. The findings of the committee and what this means more generally. So James, the last time you were on the show, we spoke about the debanking of politicians such as Nigel Farage. Are these debanking scandals connected to that, or is this something completely different?
The reason we're talking about them is connected to a certain degree because but obviously we're talking about retail customers versus SME customers, which is slightly different reasons to a certain degree. But obviously the FCA did issue a report or a review off the back of this particular episode with Nigel Farage, where they basically did a full review of the main banks and building societies that they supervised to determine why businesses and individuals are being unbanked. So whilst this is a separate report that we're going to slightly talk about today, there is elements of connection because that output that the FCA provided did give us some additional insights on the SME and business side as well.
And the data that came out of this report showed that about 5.3 million accounts held by small and medium-sized enterprises. That's the total number of accounts. And then 141,620 of those were forcibly closed by the banks, which is 2.7% of the total. What was your first thought when you saw these figures? Do you think these figures are disappointing or realistic?
I mean, it seems a lot, but I think we have to take a step back and view where the UK sits in the world of trade a little bit as well, like in terms of the volume and how the ability to create and formalise new companies in the UK and use that to facilitate trade, whatever kind of sector you work in, is substantial compared to, you know, maybe other countries. So I think in terms of proportionality perspective, it may not actually be as big as we originally anticipate.
And Neil, what are some of the legitimate reasons for a bank deciding to forcibly close a small business account? As we know, small businesses can be a popular target for money launderers. So what are some of the reasons?
Absolutely. Look, I think financial crime is one of the principal reasons, of course. And it has been, as we've seen from the reports, is one of the main reasons why banks have been exiting customers. Dormant accounts as well, or accounts that are no longer active, is another reason why banks will quite often exit relationships. Because, of course, there's a cost associated with maintaining accounts and maintaining the customer relationship. So that cost is no more economical or commercially viable. But look, I think from a legal perspective here, in terms of reasons and legitimacy for terminating or exiting relationships, banks will very often, and financial institutions will very often have very broad contractual terms, which enable them to really exit the relationship on any basis. They don't necessarily have to have a reason to do so. And I think that's what leads to these kind of figures that have been included in the report. And of course, the issue then for banks and financial institutions is whether by exercising that contractual right to exit the relationship, they're potentially exposing themselves by breaching other legal or regulatory obligations that they might have.
Because we do value financial inclusion here in Europe. It's everyone should have access to the banking and financial system. So from my experience, you need to have a pretty good reason to close down an account as well. Do you then think that there is a one-to-one correlation that all these accounts were actually justified, that they were somehow linked to financial crime? Or do you think there are a lot of, let's call it, innocent victims of legitimate SMEs who now are then left without a bank account and unable to operate their business?
Yeah, I think it's a very valid concern to raise, Marriott. I think, look, what's absolutely key is that these decisions are made on a case-by-case basis and are evidence-based and fact-based decisions. As you rightly say, the consequences are potentially significant for SMEs that don't have access to banking services. And so it's very important that a kind of blanket approach isn't taken to a group, for example, of SMEs, and that they're treated individually. What I would say is that the banks included in the report are very kind of sophisticated internal teams who conduct investigations, and that these decisions aren't made by one person alone. There's a number of stakeholders who are consulted, there are investigations and indeed various committees and robust governance around those decisions.
And just to follow up on that, because here in Norway, we saw recently that Danske Bank started charging large enterprises, so a different customer segment, they started charging for compliance. So then I'm wondering, do you think that debanking these SMEs because they were dormant accounts, they weren't profitable, but the bank still had to do all of the compliance work and take on that cost, so we just weren't profitable businesses and that's why they got offboarded? Do you think there's any truth to that statement?
I mean, I think there absolutely probably is a link in many of these cases, and some kind of cost-benefit analysis must factor into the decision to exit the relationship. Given the regulatory scrutiny and the enforcement risk that so many banks now face, they have to invest so much money in terms of resources and compliance and ongoing monitoring of customer activity, that the relationship really has to be worth it from the banks, from a commercial perspective, in order to really justify that cost. And James, I'm sure you see lots of this in the work you do in terms of weighing up those commercial factors against the compliance.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's important to remember that the rights of a corporate or SME are very different to the consumer right now, like in the sense that there's certain rights to, have an account that the banks have to provide to these kind of individuals as a staple. So hence why obviously the Nigel Farage side of things, albeit quite nuanced, made the press so much, whereas obviously from a corporate SME perspective, the banks are allowed to make their decisions on a commercial perspective, which ultimately is very different to managing like a retail portfolio.
Very good point. And we will later in the episode talk about the solutions on how to improve compliance for SMEs. But back to then all these 140,000 debanked SMEs. So in this report, it was, you know, large tier one banks that was part of the survey. And one of the things that you hear from the market is that financial crime kind of also trickles down, that if you don't get a bank account with the largest bank, you try a smaller bank, you go to the fintechs, you try the newly started companies, etc., to kind of get past the compliance and be onboarded and get an account. Where do all these SMEs end up? Because let's say they were criminals, do they just stop their operation, or do they then try to become a customer somewhere else to continue their operation? What do you think, James?
Ultimately, if it is a criminal account, they usually target the weakest link in theory, which can often be, you know, a smaller business or maybe a particular bank or something that have weak controls. So I think there's an element of it being cross-pollinated across smaller businesses, smaller kind of financial services and larger financial services. I think let's also not forget that a lot of those smaller payment firms that maybe offer SME banking ultimately have a counterparty that are facilitating the transactions. So if they have been offboarded, or a particular SME has been offboarded by Bank A, it is likely that that if they go to another payments firm or challenger bank or something, that those transactions are still going to be facilitated by Bank A anyway. So it's likely to be identified and, you know, eventually maybe moved around the table a little bit. But yeah, I don't know what you think now.
Yeah, it is a major concern, I think, in terms of the consequences for an SME in terms of finding alternative banking providers. I think we've seen some quite interesting legislative changes in the past 2 months in the UK, which is the introduction of new information sharing provisions to facilitate information sharing on customers between banks. And I wonder if that might just help to address the information delta that perhaps exists at the moment between different banks, in that if Bank A exits the customer, then information can be shared with Bank B, so they can make a more informed decision as to whether they want to bank that customer or not, and come to a more informed judgment on that.
Yeah. So before we jump into how to improve compliance for SMEs, two final questions is, do committees like this actually matter? And how does political pressure influence the work of compliance professionals?
I mean, massively. I mean, if we take the UK as an example, the UK, obviously post-Brexit, wants to be, you know, a main kind of a powerhouse for trade, as it always has been, albeit, you know, lesser than it used to be. But I think ultimately the politicians' agenda is to make sure that we have a ecosystem that allows that. So to encourage, obviously, businesses to kind of set up shop here. So I think from an SME perspective, if we are portraying that we are not open for business, it looks bad in theory. But if you look through some of the granular detail, it's not necessarily as bad as maybe you think. I think some of the subsectors the FCA quoted that in their research were like things like arms, military businesses, embassies, shell banks, checks, caffing services, and gambling businesses. So I think if you look at some of the kind of actual kind of analysis that the FCA do on their account closure view, maybe it's not quite as bad as we originally anticipated.
Neil, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this in particular, debanking merit is such an interesting area, because it's the coming together of a number of different risk factors, right? It's legal risk, it's regulatory risk, financial crime risk, reputational risk. And I think that's what makes it such an interesting area for us as advisors. And so I think from the position of compliance professionals, yes, it's challenging. Yes, you know, you're having to manage your business stakeholders, your lawyers, and the legal and regulatory risk. But it's a really interesting, fast moving area to be involved in, I think, at present. And look, there's obviously clear, really significant political appetite sitting behind all of this, which is why committees like this are getting so much prominence at the moment. But I think for a compliance professional, the best thing they can do is take advice and just take it step by step as they kind of navigate through these decisions, which are quite complex.
Strys has been named one of the world's most innovative companies by Fast Company in 2024, alongside the likes of NVIDIA, OpenAI, and even Taylor Swift Productions. want to avoid bad blood with the regulators? We are tackling major anti-money laundering challenges by automating and resolving banks' data and workflow issues. Currently stuck with an outdated system? Shake it off. Strys is built with AI at its core. It's modular by design and ready for future challenges faced by banks. Need an anti-money laundering hero? Strys delivers value from day one. Our solution is packaged so that banks and financial institutions can immediately use and implement. Ready to start your automation love story? Visit strys.ai today. Back to the show. Now for the second part of the show, we need to talk about how to improve compliance for SMEs, because it is really important. The government reports that turnover for UK SMEs was £2.4 trillion in 2023, and that's 53% of the total turnover of private businesses. So they matter, and we want the good ones to have access to banking. So what would be something that could be done tomorrow to help solve this problem of businesses being debanked? What do you think, James? Do you have any top-of-mind suggestions?
I mean, one of the things that we often see from some of the advisory services do is how businesses operationalize their risk appetite, particularly in this area. Like if you go into a bank or you go into a business, they often have high-level risk appetite, and then maybe they have... obviously, the banks are a little bit more robust here, but you know, below them, which some of these SMEs end up being serviced by, they don't necessarily have a robust risk appetite, which means the sales team, the compliance team, kind of they're operating a little bit of in a grey area. So they don't know maybe what industries they're able to support. They maybe don't have a robust risk rating of the different industries. They don't have a prohibited list or something like that. So I think there's often some grey areas of how they operationalize that risk appetite rather than just having a blanket couple of statements in a policy level.
Neil, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd actually like to look at it from the other perspective, Mary, actually from the SME perspective. And I wonder if more work could be done with SMEs by industry bodies, by the Federation of Small Businesses and other organizations to help improve the financial crime controls at the SME level. Because I think if banks had that level of assurance and that comfort that there were more robust controls in place at the SMEs themselves, that then that would have a direct impact in terms of the level of exit decisions that are made.
What do you mean when you say more robust financial crime controls at the SME level? Could you give some specific examples?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think banks, of course, will be used to dealing with organizations and organizations themselves that have very extensive controls. SMEs may be smaller organizations that, for very good reasons, haven't invested significantly in onboarding due diligence controls, kind of understanding who their counterparties are, maybe doing some kind of basic sanction screening. We often see SMEs now who may have a counterpart who ultimately is owned or controlled by a designated person, for example. That's exactly the kind of thing that a bank will detect the payment, and that would lead to a financial crime concern and could ultimately lead to an exit decision. So I think if there was some work done at the SME level and with AI and the different tools available now, there are options there for SMEs to invest in proportionate controls that aren't going to involve a huge overhaul and that are fit for purpose for smaller organizations. So I do think that would give the financial services, the banking sector, that comfort to continue to bank these customers.
That's definitely a good point as well, Neil. I think something that we've seen over the years at Fintro is that certain businesses, although they are not regulated or supervised for money laundering in the same way as a financial services business might, they make a decision to ultimately get, a financial crime audit, an AML audit or something to basically satisfy their counterparty banking partners that they have the proportionate controls, albeit they are not regulated to have them, to give comfort to their counterparty to ensure that they are ultimately not debanked. So as Neil alluded to, like some of those controls, having some assurance activities that they have them in place. So we at Fintro have done a few of those audits for some interesting businesses that are not supervise the money laundering, but ultimately they wanted to have an audit in place to satisfy their banking partners.
Do you think, James, that these types of controls should become mandatory for certain types of industries, or would that be just too much red tape?
I think too much red tape, probably, to like, you know, remember we have a whole range of different size of SMEs, covers a whole range of different profitability of businesses. And I think there's clearly an affordability that comes into play, but particularly with probably those higher risk sectors, because it's not just higher risk sectors that are maybe getting kind of de-risked in certain ways, but where you are viewed as a higher risk industry, you might want to be proactive in your approach if you can afford it, and if you can afford those services from the likes of Neil or Ashurst or Findra.
I think affordability and what you said earlier, Neil, about AI, from my perspective, I think that would be also a solution going forward here, because obviously, if SMEs are debanked because it just costs too much keeping up with compliance versus what you kind of make having that as a particular customer, that is not sustainable. But my hope is that with the AI revolution going on, banks can move much more towards automation that also provides the level of accuracy and detail that's required, so that you can get the cost of compliance down for, let's say, the SMEs that are no red flags, not in non-risk industries, that doesn't require that extra human, let's say, investigation. But that at least my hope, because I think that would be a huge change. Because now, well, we work with a lot of onboarding teams who onboard merchants, onboard businesses, and just seeing the level of manual work that goes into it, just people drawing up UBO charts, org charts, like there's so much manual calculations that I think a computer should really take over, so you can get the humans to do the deep dive. I think the AI here will play a huge part going forward.
I think that's absolutely right, Marit. And of course, the current situation where people are just very, very stretched, and a lot of this work is done manually and a lot of compliance teams are stretched, what that leads to is to blanket type decision making. Right, or not making those decisions on an individual case by case basis, which, as we discussed at the outset, is so critical here in terms of managing the legal and regulatory risks. And of course, that's where AI may offer solutions as well, is that the sophistication of the technology, I think, will assist compliance officers just to really scrutinize and probe individual cases and make using the vast amount of data points which will be available.
Do you think, Neil, that with the recent European AI Act, that it will make it easier for banks to adopting AI systems, or do you think it will make them even more cautious and postpone the decision 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, because they want to see how that regulation comes into play first?
Yeah, look, I think the fact that the regime is there in place and that there's a framework in which they can adopt these new technologies, I think will provide the legal and regulatory certainty that banks need. But and James will certainly have views on this. I think one of the inherent challenges for banks is the adoption of new systems and new controls and implementing them alongside the very, very large kind of existing platforms and controls that are in place, and the integration that has to go through. It's a huge program, obviously. So I expect that they'll be fairly selective in their adoption of AI.
These things take a while to adopt, and I think it's not going to be the only thing that solves anything like that. I think there's often some process things, or just having the right personnel in the business can actually make a huge difference. So I think I definitely agree that moving forward and progressing on that side of things and the adoption, you know, will help eventually. But I think, you know, let's not forget that often the final decision making process does end up sitting with an individual, particularly where there's some nuanced bits, but it will help certainly.
Final question before we go into a quick fire round. The new legislation around data sharing between banks, do you think this will help on the debanked SME situation? And how do you see this working out in practice? Neil, you go first.
I do think it will help, Marit, because I think any additional transparency and sharing of information that can be brought around financial crime that can be done in a lawful way will ultimately be helpful to inform other parties and just to improve everyone's understanding of the risks.
Will it be so that the bank sent around an Excel spreadsheet with the names of the blacklisted SMEs, or how do you see it play out in practice?
Yeah, sure. So the new regime is really interesting because it allows direct requests, direct information sharing between banks, which we did not have previously. And so, yes, in practice, one bank can proactively make a request of another. But similarly, and what's really interesting under these new rules, Marit, is that a bank can proactively volunteer information to another bank. Now, this is all voluntary, so we'll wait and see what the uptake is. The precise mechanics of how it will work in terms of, you know, whether it, I expect it can, the legislation allows for it to be done relatively informally, so compliance officer to compliance officer, for example. We've yet to see, it only came in mid-January, so we've yet to see extensive examples of this. James may have seen others, but it's definitely got potential, I think, to facilitate quite significant information sharing across the industry.
I wonder whether it could go one or two ways, and it's all dependent on the portfolio within the organization. It's either going to be you're sharing all the information to get more information about a certain business, and you end up having a cull of your book because you realize you have a whole range of activities that you don't necessarily want to facilitate. Or if your kind of SME book is more squeaky clean, let's say, you have the additional kind of consideration that makes you satisfied that you can maintain that relationship. So I don't know if that's helpful. I'm basically being a classic consultant and sitting on the fence, but I think somewhere it could happen. It could help. It could increase the amount of SMEs that are removed from certain kind of organizations. So let's see.
I think we have identified both the AI and also new information sharing as two potential really good sources of improving this debanked situations for SMEs. We are coming to an end of this episode, so we are going to dish out some quick fire questions for you. So I'll say just a sentence and say the first words that pop into your mind. All right. I'll start with you, Neil. What's the biggest reason 140,000 SMEs were debanked in the past year?
Financial crime.
James?
Dormant accounts.
What changes do we need to see to stop what's happening? James?
Guidance on high-risk industries.
Neil?
Investment at SME level in compliance controls.
How do we separate the bad actors from those unjustly debanked? Neil?
I think just greater transparency and more information sharing on individual customers.
James?
Better connections between KYC onboarding information and the customer behavior in the downstream relationship.
And final one, why does this matter? What are the real world consequences of not getting this right?
Recession.
Yeah. Okay. Significant legal and regulatory risk for banks.
And James?
I mean, these SMEs service all sorts of different subsectors themselves. So, it's ultimately going to affect the wider ecosystem.
That brings this spin of the laundry to an end. James and Neil, thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find and connect with you?
Fintra website, LinkedIn, follow me, connect with me.
Neil?
Likewise on LinkedIn, and we're located next to Spitalfields Market, so always available for a coffee. Money makes a
world go round. Thank you for listening. This brings this season of The Laundry to an end, but we will be back in 2 weeks' time with 12 brand new episodes. If you've enjoyed this episode, check out the back catalog and follow The Laundry on your podcast platform of choice. You can also talk about the podcast on your social media channels. It really helps people to find us. Got something you would like to share? You can comment on the Strize LinkedIn page, my LinkedIn page, or email laundry@strize.ai. Your host for this episode was me, Marit. Our producer was Matthew. Our engineers were Dominic and Nicholas. The Laundry is proudly produced by Strize, the AML automation cloud. Your data problem and your workflow problem, now it isn't your problem. Visit strize.ai for more information. See you soon. Money makes a world go round.